This is SBS Spice.
Why do you think philosophy as a field still struggles so much with including diverse perspectives, diverse people?
I'm going to say the discipline's relation to its own history.
Welcome to Rethinking South Asian Philosophy, SBS Spice's podcast series adding some much-needed South Asian chili into the world of philosophy. My name is Bhanuraj Kashyap, resident philosopher and your host for this series. When I first came to Australia as an international student, I had no idea what I was going to study. I had always enjoyed literature, and my family fancied the idea of me becoming a literature scholar, reading all these big, dense books, often written in impenetrable prose. But I remember taking an introductory course in philosophy. By the end of the first lecture, I knew I was going to major in philosophy instead. I was, to put it simply, completely enamored with philosophy. The chance to study some of the deepest, most fundamental questions that we as a species wrestle with? Oof, I loved that. Over the next 3 to 4 years, I studied as many philosophy subjects as I could. From ancient Greek philosophy to early modern European thought. From the existentialists to the libertarians. As exciting as it was to learn about all of these areas of thought, it was also lonely. During most of my undergraduate years, I did not meet another South Asian student in any of my philosophy classes. I hardly saw any people of color. Most are surprised to learn this. After all, students of South Asian descent, both domestic and international, constitute a large portion of our university student population. I have heard from within my own discipline that maybe students from Pakistan or India are just not that interested in philosophy. Maybe we gravitate towards other disciplines, such as law, IT, or medicine. But similar things get said about people of color in general. As I learned when I spoke with Brian Mukandi, a lecturer in philosophy at the University of Wollongong, who is passionate about philosophies from the global south.
You know, I think often when people respond to things, I think it's helpful to think, what work does that response do, right? So the claim that students from a variety of backgrounds just aren't interested in philosophy, you know, like, what work does that do and for whom? And I would argue that lets philosophers off the hook. Because the thing is, if you go to a faculty of business, if you go to a history department, if you go to a variety of other fields in the university, you will see a very broad diversity of students and faculties in those spaces. If you go to philosophy, this is not the case. Like, it's incredibly, incredibly parochial. And parochial is my polite way of saying generally very, very, very white.
Brian's analysis is spot on. And diversity is a huge problem in philosophy. And we'll expand on this later in the episode. Delving more into the experience of loneliness I shared earlier, which unfortunately is rather common among minority students, I asked Karen Jones, who is an associate professor of philosophy at the University of Melbourne, about other kinds of diversity issues that philosophy faces.
Another significant one is the participation of women in philosophy. And it has, there's lots of theories about this. It's been subject to a lot of discussion. You know, there are many mathematics departments in the world that have a higher ratio of women than philosophy departments. And this strikes people as a huge surprise, right? Because you expect, well, it's the humanities, there are more women in the humanities, or math, that's STEM. We know we've got an exclusion issue in STEM. But in fact, philosophy sits within the humanities at roughly similar ratios to STEM subjects.
Why do you think philosophy as a field still struggles so much with including diverse perspectives, diverse people? And you mentioned, like, maybe even more than other areas in the humanities or sciences.
I'm going to say the discipline's relation to its own history. Now, this is going to seem controversial to some people. So we have tended to have within the discipline a long list of dead white men. And I love the history of philosophy, so this is not knocking the history of philosophy, but a lot of people don't see themselves represented in that history. And some of the things that some of these theorists say that philosophers tend to just sweep under the rug are really awful about women and about race. And that's not a surprise, of course, because philosophers, like any other human being, are people of their time. Right? But you might go, why am I having to engage with these texts of dead white guys who said all these toxic things about me? Okay, they said a lot of other really, really interesting things that weren't about you and aren't toxic and are super interesting to explore. But there's a kind of sense of constantly returning to these theorists and valorizing them and ignoring the fact that they were not, certainly not all of them, but there's a nice long history of both racism and misogyny in Western philosophy.
Now, I would like you as a listener to reflect on your perception of philosophy. When you think of a philosopher, do you think of an old white man with a big beard carrying large books? Or do you think of an Indian sage referring to centuries-old scriptures written in Sanskrit or Pali? Or maybe neither. Irrespective of the image you have of these philosophers, it is almost impossible to study philosophy without going to Western philosophers first. That is the point at which you enter the discipline. There is no denying that philosophy prioritizes a particular history, and that history is Western-centric. This valorization of the history of philosophy gets embedded into how we conceptualize the kind of questions we can ask and the kind of perspectives we can take seriously. Helen Noh, a philosopher of critical race theory at Deakin University, explained the unfolding of this process.
So when you have a discipline tradition that is very used to theorizing questions or the human condition grounded in a particular experience that doesn't specify a particular experience of racialization, of gender, of sexuality, et cetera, et cetera. Invariably in the Western tradition, that means we're theorizing from the experience of a white male subject. And so I think people see themselves excluded by the questions that then get asked or the problems that are solved. So that's a really subtle way in which a discipline, like a practice, can exclude certain people. And this is not to say that all philosophers of color are interested in doing work in and around racism, because that's clearly not true and it shouldn't be the case. But I think when you see a discipline on the whole systematically exclude sets of experiences, you get the message that this discipline is not really for you.
And do you think because of that, a lot of philosophers of color, they actually decide to leave philosophy then?
Yeah, I think there is a bit of that. And I think, you know, there's a question of whether or not philosophy is attracting these students in the first place, but if it is attracting them, whether or not they're able to keep them, because there's, you know, there's no reason to say that people from all sorts of different backgrounds aren't as interested in philosophical questions. If anything, possibly more so because the conditions of their existence might bring certain questions into a sharper view, right? But I've seen many times students who are interested in certain kinds of questions but don't find those conversations within the philosophy, so then go looking for it elsewhere in sort of cognate disciplines, in sociology, in anthropology, in cultural studies, etc.
Which is a huge loss, I guess, to philosophy there as well.
You're with SBS Spice.
Besides these subtle exclusions of South Asians and other people of color, there is another persistent exclusion that I discussed with my guests. Non-Western philosophy is nothing but a mere afterthought. One major issue that I think I have observed over the years I guess, philosophy academia in Australia is how often non-Western traditions, especially African traditions, Asian traditions, Indigenous traditions, they tend to get overlooked in Australian universities. They're rarely part of the curriculum. And very few philosophers, I think I can only think of a handful off the top of my head, who actually engage with these traditions in their research.
Yeah.
Why do you think these traditions are so often excluded?
I mean, that's interesting, right? I mean, if you take ancient Greek philosophy, for example, you know, as far as Plato is concerned, Egypt is the seat of learning. If you take German philosophers, figures like Schopenhauer, the degree to which they're reading texts from South Asia is profound. In fact, there's an excellent book by Park about that looks at this phenomenon up until before the 18th century, how, you know, the group of scholars in places like Germany engaging in Sanskrit texts because they were serious philosophers. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. Believe it or not, and I think some people will find it very hard to believe that I think this, but I genuinely do. I am not invested in the study of any particular tradition, right? I am not a nationalist when it comes to thought. The thing, though, is I think either we are seriously grapple with some things in the world, or we are cosplaying. Given the tradition, the years and years and years of thought and debate about fundamental questions that have happened in what's today China, in what's today India and Pakistan and Bangladesh, in, you know, today's African countries. Given the fact that people there have been grappling just as seriously as people in Europe with some fundamental questions, it's inconceivable to me that a serious philosopher today wouldn't want to turn up every rock. Wouldn't want to go to every resource they have available to attempt to grapple with those questions.
Despite what Brian says, many tend to think that non-Western thinkers just haven't produced philosophical thought that is comparable to their Western counterparts. How would one respond to such cultural shamanism?
I think it displays a real kind of Eurocentric racism, if you like. And I think the terms Eurocentrism, racism, there are distinctions between them, but at the same time, I think sometimes it doesn't help to be too precious about it. Look, I think to put it shortly, if you insist that the Western philosophical tradition is the only one that has anything of value to say, I think that's one, you're not reading other traditions and you're not reading them closely enough. I think that takes a particular skill, right? I don't think it's given that you can just wander into different traditions of thought and not be challenged by how we engage that, right? And so there's a kind of humility that's required. So the kind of position that you describe is the exact opposite of that. If say that because other philosophical traditions aren't rich or they don't embody a certain kind of excellence, probably because we're not engaging in them properly.
But how much are academics supposed to do when we look at the humanities right now in Australian universities? We're in the middle of an economic crisis caused by dwindling enrollments, caps on international students, and the casualization of teaching. Many of these departments might have the political will to change their curriculum and diversify their staff. But where will the funding come from? There aren't even enough resources to teach different traditions within Western philosophy.
I'm going to give you a little bit of pushback about this disciplinary openness. Yes, people say this. And there are some people who are working really hard to bring it about. But when push comes to shove, the will often disappears. Now, for me, where this was best encapsulated was actually in New Zealand. Between 2005 and 2011, there were 18 philosophy appointments in New Zealand. And this was a time when philosophy departments were saying, we need more women, we have to diversify. So they had 18 opportunities to do this. They appointed 17 men out of 18 opportunities. So yes, we've got a resource constraint, but I do not see us yet getting to equity in the distributions of our scarce resources. And I think that's because some people actually aren't on board. Some people just are not on board. A lot of people are on board, but in a more talk the talk kind of way, rather than walk the walk.
If you're a woman or a person of color, or God forbid, a woman of color, it might seem like things are stacked against you. As a community of scholars, what can we do?
I think philosophy really needs, as a discipline, really needs to challenge itself in many different ways, both in terms of the kind of community building work, to be more attentive to what experiences students might have moving through philosophy and how they might differ according to what sort of situation, circumstances people are with. So, you know, how welcoming is the philosophical community to people from marginalized experiences? I think that's a real important question to ask. I think it's also incumbent on philosophy and philosophers in their work to think about, like, whose experiences or life conditions do these questions really reflect? And you might not be explicitly working on a question of race, but you might be working on a question of women's healthcare or you know, our relationship to death, etc. There might be very, you know, questions that you don't think have a racialized component to it. But actually, I think philosophy as a discipline should be asking, well, you know, what are the assumed and implicit conditions or experiences that are baked into my inquiry?
Many philosophers are more than happy to subscribe to this idea of disciplinary self-reflection. But as long as we can maintain our standards of excellence and merit. If people of color or women wish to join the discipline and contribute to philosophical discourse, they need to attempt to meet these standards. We can't simply get rid of merit and excellence now, can we?
Some philosophy is richer, deeper, more interesting than other kinds of philosophy. But you've got multiple different ways of being deeper, richer, more exciting. It's a US theorist, Dotson, who talked about this, the idea that we have a discipline that's organized hierarchically. There's the center stuff, the core stuff. It's very narrow, and everything else has to be assessed by the same standards as this. And she advocates instead for a distributed understanding of disciplinary excellence where there are multiple nodes, and each of those nodes might develop good methodologies, might develop standards for what counts as a good justification. So I don't want to chuck the idea of merit, but we've got this idea that merit looks like exactly one thing. And gosh, it looks like that one thing that by and large tends to be the thing that white guys do. In which case, this notion of merit is going to really not help you. But I don't want to chuck it out. I want to say, let's look really pluralistically. Let's look at the multiple conversations. Let's look at the multiple different ways in which people are building excellent arguments, are talking about justification, are building canons and alternative canons. And let's allow those multiple nodes to certify people to work in the academy.
The story I've told of exclusion and racism in philosophy isn't even the most scandalous part.
I think the most scandalous thing is if you take your discipline seriously, if you genuinely think that the work that you do has the potential to illuminate public discourse in particular kinds of way, if that's your genuine outlook, then I don't think you can afford to be so parochial. I think the lack of investment and desire in gathering in our departments, you know, people who are thinking from the vantage of and in conversation with a plethora of traditions, I think that's symptomatic of a community of scholars that have ceased to take themselves seriously or ceased to believe that the work that they do can genuinely impact the world. And I think that's tragic.
In this podcast series, our job is to resist that tragedy. While we will keep returning to the question of inclusion and diversity in philosophy, we will also attempt to converse with a plethora of traditions, with a special focus on South Asian intellectual and philosophical traditions as practiced and discussed in Australia. Thank you so much for joining me for our first episode of Rethinking South Asian Philosophy. To join the conversation, follow us on Instagram at SBS Spice. For all future episodes, search for SBS Spice on the SBS Audio app or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back soon to continue our journey through philosophy, but with some much-needed South Asian chili.
For more hot takes from South Asians in Australia, find and follow SBS Spice on Instagram at SBS Spice or on YouTube by searching for SBS South Asian. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button.